This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, December 10th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for tuning in. We'll begin with a legend of comedy. Beginning Tuesday, Dr. Frankenstein and his monster will be on stage at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The musical, Young Frankenstein, and yes, the doctor in the story eventually adopts the traditional pronunciation, was created by Mel Brooks, based on Brooks' own classic film. Last week, Kevin Kinder of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers came to KUAF to place a call to Mel Brooks. Part of that interview can be read in today's edition of What's Up in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, and part can be heard here right now. Kevin asked Mel Brooks why he considers Young Frankenstein perhaps his best movie.
I don't know. I think it works so well because it has a magnificent story replete with, eternal, memorable characters. I mean, and the whole idea, I chalk the whole thing up to womb envy, not penis envy, mind you. My take on it has always been, right since I read the Mary Shelley book, it's been womb envy, because a woman can very easily recreate life, make a person. But it's very hard for a scientist, a guy, to do the same thing. Very hard. You know, they're doing it now somewhat with cloning sheep and stuff. But so I say Young Frankenstein is probably men jealous of women. That's what it's about.
I've also read that part of your inspiration was because the original movie version scared you to death.
Yeah, the James Whale, 1931 movie version starring Boris Karloff, really scared. I mean, I remember saying to my mother, it was a hot, very hot July night. We were living in Williamsburg, which is a section of Brooklyn, New York. Sometimes when people ask me, they say, where are you from? I say, Williamsburg. They say, Virginia. I say, yes. You know, why not take advantage of it? And why not? Because I went to school. Actually, I'm gonna get back to that story. You asked me about my schooling after this.
I did.
So anyway, I said to my mother, it was July 4th or something. It was very hot, and I said, close the window. You know, it was at 9 or 10 o'clock when little kids go to sleep, and she said, it's too hot, Melvin. It's too hot. I got to leave the window open. Well, you know, you'll boil in here. I said, close the window, because I had just seen that morning, it was Saturday, I'd seen Frankenstein. And I said, if you leave the window open, Frankenstein will climb up the fire escape, will come in the window, and he will eat me up. And she said, okay, she said, let's talk about it. So she sat down in my bed, I'll never forget this, and she said, if Frankenstein, we call the monster Frankenstein in those days, she said, if Frankenstein was going to eat you up, he'd have to leave Transylvania. He'd have to find his way to a seaport to get a ship and have to pay for his passage to New York. And then when he arrived in New York, he wouldn't have money for a trolley car or a taxi. And why would he go to Brooklyn? Why wouldn't he go to Park Avenue, where rich people live, and eat up rich people? Anyway, if he came to Brooklyn, he would have to find 365 South 3rd Street. He'd have to find. He'd have to get on the fire escape, which is hard to get on because it doesn't go down to the ground. And he'd have to climb up 5 stories and have to open our window, which is stuck at a certain point. And then he'd have to climb into our apartment, your bedroom, and then he would have to eat you. So I don't think he's going to take that much. And when I listened, I said, okay, leave the window open.
One of the signature moments in both the film and the stage musical is the doctor and the monster performing the song Putting on the Ritz. Brooks told Kevin Kinder of Northwest Arkansas Newspaper during their conversation that putting that number in the film was Gene Wilder's idea. Wilder played Dr. Frankenstein in the film.
And, you know, we had a big fight, Gene and I. He didn't want to do I mean, he wanted Putting on the Ritz. I came up with the idea, and I abandoned it. The guy said, it's going to tear it. It's going to be stupid. It's going to be silly. It's gonna, you know, we should really salute Mr. Whale and, you know, and the black and, you know, black and white. And he said, well, let's put the number in, even though it seems silly. And I told him later it was the best thing in the movie. and thanks for fighting. Well, we fought a long, hard fight, and he said, just film it, and then you can throw it out. So we wrote it together, so I owed him that, so I did. And it worked immediately. It translated itself from the film to the stage with such grace and ease and beauty. It was just perfect for the Broadway stage. And gave me another chance to flex my musical muscles. I think I wrote a much better score than the one for the producers. But the producers was the first, and so it was like the miracle, you know.
Right.
And had we done Young Frankenstein first, I'm sure it would have done just as well as the producers. But you know, then. I mean, what is it? Maybe they know me, so intimacy breeds contempt. I don't know. The second one,
so
according to some of the critics, certainly wasn't as good as the first one, but I thought it was better. But, you know, and then time will bear me out. You know, time
right.
will bear me out.
Were there a lot of other challenges bringing that movie to the stage?
Yeah, because it's first of all, it's big stuff. You need a very big theater. And so, you know, traveling with a lot of scenery, I mean, it's when you're on the road, it's a burden. You need a lot of trucks. You need a lot of space. You need a lot. You can only book it into certain theaters in certain towns because they're simply not big enough to house it. And also the storyline... The problem in the story is that you need to really develop the love stories. You don't have time for that in the movie. You assume that, you know, one affair that the monster has with Elizabeth is enough to convince her that that's the guy for her, you know. And had we had more time, you know, on stage, because I wrote a love song called Deep Love, you know. It was no trouble writing that musical. You see, people say, "Oh, I struggled. God, it took everything out of me." I mean, it was on that musical was on cruise control. It was just it left the screen and inhabited the stage as if it was born to do it.
So, can you hurry up and do a Blazing Saddles musical?
Well, I'm thinking about it. You know, now that you mention it, I'm I know that, you know, it would face harsh criticism, you know. It's so politically incorrect. I just, you know, the N-word and sitting around a campfire and farting, that's not going to be, you know. I mean, I don't blame the critics. They're going to be, they're going to savage that if I do it. But I think I could, I don't even have to come to New York with that one. I think Blazing Saddles is so famous and popular, I could just play America, or I could play 130 cities before I came to New York.
Mel Brooks talked with Kevin Kinder of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers last week. You can read part of that interview in today's edition of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. And you can hear more from the conversation at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. But before we leave this interview with Mel Brooks, his take on Fayetteville.
I think when I was a kid, I went through Fayetteville. I don't remember because I was drunk. I was a soldier. Now, this is all true.
I know. When you said kid, I was expecting you, like, six, and then you said you were drunk.
No, I was really a kid. I was drunk. I was, you may not have heard of it. I was at a place called Lawton, Oklahoma.
Sure.
And I was at a place called Fort Sill, Field Artillery Base. And I was in basic training. And one of the towns we drove to was Fayetteville. And they've done it. They were so damn sweet and nice, and they got me drunk.
Mel Brooks, one of only 12 people in history to win an Oscar, a Grammy, an Emmy, and a Tony, talking to Kevin Kinder of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers last week. Brooks' stage musical of Young Frankenstein will open at Walton Arts Center on Tuesday night. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. This reminder, it's time for the KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway. Thanks to our KUAF underwriters, it's our chance to give back to you. You could win a gift from IM Spa, the University of Arkansas Bookstore, Serta Pro Painters of Northwest Arkansas, the Trailside Cafe and Tea Room, and many others. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com. The drawing will be held Thursday during classical music with PJ Hrabowski. And please, just one entry per person. Thanks and good luck. This is Ozarks at Large. Tonight, there's another edition of what's become a musical holiday tradition in Fayetteville. The Claudia Burson Trio will play a holiday-themed jazz concert at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Fayetteville. The trio, Claudia Burson Piano, Drew Packard Bass, and Steve Wilkes Drums, will play holiday music from spiritual to secular. We're listening to the trio's version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas from a similar concert a couple of years ago. This week, Steve Wilkes, drummer for the Claudia Burson Trio, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about tonight's concert.
Well, I know that one of the pieces that we'll be playing is a tune written by Bill Evans called It's Love, It's Christmas. And it's a very serious piece of music. It's a beautiful ballad that he wrote. And so here's one of the jazz icons who's literally writing for the season itself. But, you know, most of the music that we think of as Christmas music or holiday music, it kind of came, they're popular American songs. They were written either for the movies in the 1940s and 50s, or they were written and then used in movies. So you think of White Christmas and Winter Wonderland and tunes like that. Well, I mean, those are no more or less serious than songs that have made it into the Great American Songbook and become jazz standards. So this time of year, those tunes become jazz standards in the right hands.
Is it possible to take something like Gene Autry's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and find, you know, a jazz soul in there somewhere?
Oh, no, it's not possible at all. Yeah, actually, there is. That's a song that I don't think we play. I mean, I don't recall playing it. Lots of groups do. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we play, you know, Here Comes Santa Claus and just swing the devil out of it. So sure, you can find that. It's in your vocabulary. You know, you have this, if you play jazz or whatever kind of music you play, but if you play jazz, you have this vocabulary that you speak with and you speak from, and you're going to take any song that you work with and it's going to come out of that place. So if it's Claudia Burson, it's going to come out of the blues somewhere. There's, you know, it's going to have that kind of Bill Evans, Count Basie mishmash going on that she reminds me of. So yeah, sure, you can take any song and do that with it. all of the songs will be songs that you have heard before, with the exception of maybe that Bill Evans piece. I can tell you that we'll try to play them in a way that is fresh. I think that's the challenge with songs like these, because let's face it, we have mostly all heard Winter Wonderland. We've mostly all heard White Christmas or the music that Vince Guaraldi wrote, and we will play some of that, which everybody loves. We love it.
That's the Charlie Brown
Christmas music, and we do most of those songs from that record. We won't play all of them, of course, but we'll pick two or three and play. Some of the music will be very traditional, very spiritual, founded in the church. Some of the music will be from 50s, you know, holiday musicals. Some of it will be from 60s TV, you know, shows. The whole thing will be fun. The whole thing will be swinging. I'm really excited about playing with Claudia and Drew again this year for this. That's our working trio. Drew Packard is one of the most in-demand musicians in this entire area. He plays with a lot of different groups. He'll play some guitar and he'll play bass with us this time. And I'm excited about that. And so we just hope everybody who's, you know, we promise there'll be no living Christmas trees. I may hang an ornament off my nose, which will be a living Christmas geek. But there'll be no living Christmas trees, no kids dressed up as shepherds. This is about jazz. It's about exploring the diversity of this time of year and having a good time doing it. There's a wine and dessert reception afterward. So, you know, we hope folks who are looking for something will come out and explore it with us. It's a great time.
Acoustics good in the Fellowship Hall?
The acoustics are very good in there. I mean, so good I'd be willing to record an album in there.
Really?
I think they're really, really good. It's actually a nice place to come and hear music. Seats about 140 people. Not so much in the rounds, more in the half moon. But there isn't a bad seat in the house. I like playing in there, and of course, this is the only thing that we do, and we do this once a year, but I always look forward to it. The feedback is always tremendous. So, yeah.
Steve, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kyle.
Steve Wilkes is the drummer for the Claudia Burson Trio. They'll perform their annual winter music concert tonight at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Fayetteville. That's located at 901 West Cleveland. The concert begins at 7:30. Doors open at 7. All the music we heard in the piece, music from the Claudia Burson Trio at previous winter music concerts. And Steve Wilkes will be a very busy drummer this weekend. Saturday night and Sunday morning, he'll be playing in the musical ensemble that will perform the world premiere of a new Christmas cantata titled We Have Seen Him at First United Methodist Church in Bella Vista. The work is composed by Dan Knight, a jazz pianist and composer, a man who has been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize for another composition, the Walt Whitman Suite. Yesterday, Dan Knight, who teaches and composes at the University of Iowa, came to KUAF to talk about tomorrow's world premiere. And he says now that it's written and about to be performed, he's experiencing a range of emotions.
It's relief, exhilaration, just excitement now, I think, as much as anything else, you know, because we have fine musicians, fine singers, a fine director in Dr. Larry Zering, you know, a fine church, brave people who are willing to come and listen, and a beautiful story to tell, which is the best part of the whole process.
This, as you mentioned, as you alluded to, there is a chorus. Mm-hmm. There are musicians. Now, you said you listen to the, as you hear it in your head. How much have you heard played by human beings?
The parts played by human beings have been limited to what I do on my piano. So it's one of the nice things about the current music software is you can get mock-ups of people singing and mock-ups of choirs and mock-ups of pianos. But, you know, it just doesn't. It doesn't ring until you have the infusion of the human person there, their own particular spirit in the unique voice, and you put it all together that way. So it's been there living in my head, and I hear it that way, but it'll be nice to hear it sung back to me now.
What is it like when you do for the first time hear it in a sort of three-dimensional world, like if it was the Walt Whitman suite the first time you heard that? What happens to you?
I would imagine it's like listening to your child speak back to you. You find out right away that it has a voice that's independent of you. So you recognize the qualities that you think maybe you might have put there, and for my particular approach to composition, especially for this piece, it's felt more like dictation. So it's felt like the pieces kind of told me, go here, do this, and this, and this. And as I listened to it, and it's kind of evolved that way, it's kind of had its own kind of unique purpose and focus. So I've been surprised by it even from the start. So you expect to be surprised in a happy way. It's kind of like if you've done something in a written word, you know, you will write something and sit and say, well, I think I mean this in this paragraph. And if you've done a piece of poetry, I mean, it's always worked that way. So somebody will read something else into it and go, oh, I got so much meaning from this, or I got so much meaning for that. And I think sometimes musically, you hear a phrase or you hear some notes put together, and I'll have an emotional reaction to that. But I won't really know just exactly if I hear just little snippets at a time what it is or where it's going. So I just have to make note of it. And then as the thing speaks to me as it goes along, that it becomes something bigger. And I go, oh, well, that's what it must have been. And then sometimes there are other things that will come in and you'll say, well, put this part of this piece in there. And I won't know why, but I'll put it in and all of a sudden it'll work. So later on, I think, you know, what it really does, it's a kind of convoluted answer, but it's a kind of convoluted process for me. I think eventually what you get is a sense that the music comes through us, not from us.
You are the composer, but you're not going to be sitting in the back listening. You're going to be right there in the middle of it, playing.
Yeah. That's going to be fun for me. That's going to be great fun, and especially with the people with whom I'm working. Larry Zering is a musical brother, so if he's directing the choir, the choir is going to be there with us, and the other musicians with whom I'll be working, Steve Wilkes, Mike Johnson, Al Gibson, are fine musicians, and are people with whom I've worked quite a lot, and we always have almost a symbiotic kind of approach to the whole process. So I think being with them and them with me, we'll hear some new things.
How did this work come about?
That's a really good question. I think Larry Zering and I had talked about the possibility of maybe doing something like this at some time at Bella Vista United Methodist Church, because what we've always done is come down. Except for the last couple of years, I would say, I'd come down about once a year and do something with the Barbara Mashburn Scholarship Foundation, do something to work with them and then work with the kids, and we'd have a benefit concert or something like that. And then as a tie-in to the benefit concert, we'd come and do something at Bella Vista United Methodist Church. The people there started doing a Mardi Gras party, and I remember it just being enormously successful just from our standpoint, because they would come, and the people of the church would cook gumbo that was just to die for. and we guys just in the group would kind of just sit together and play and just have a riotously good time. And the food was wonderful, and the fellowship was wonderful, and the reason for being there was great. So we kind of did that and did that and did that. And Larry just kind of looked at me, and he said, well, you know, maybe we want to think about doing something else. Maybe we should do something original. What other thing we could do? And what other thing could we do? And it's always kind of been in the back of my mind. It's something I started even about 10 years ago. I said, if I did a treatment of Christmas and did it in the language of jazz, what would it sound like? So I thought, okay, well, maybe we should do something like that. So I think, I forget who started it, but we just kind of said last spring, I think, maybe we might want to, I think Larry sent me an email. That's how it happened. He just kind of sent me an email out of the blue and said, Dan, here's a possibility. How about maybe doing something like this for Christmas? And I said, if we did, we'd have to have the usual suspects. And that's the usual suspects would be Mike Johnson and Steve Wilkes and Al Gibson. And Larry Cangalosi, if he's around, you know, mm-hmm. a great saxophone player. But there's some phenomenal jazz musicians in this area. Just people who can play anything from straight music to classical music to jazz. And it's great to have them around and great to have them as a resource. So I said, well, if we had them as a resource and have you directing a choir, we could do whatever we wanted to do. So the whole idea that I had for this is to take the things from the scripture and put them in with a new background. It's kind of taking a beautiful painting, just a gorgeous painting that you've looked at all your life, and saying, what would it look like in a little different frame? And sometimes it makes all the difference. So, you know, when you have a beautiful, wondrous story like that, that's what you look for. You look for the story, and you look for where it sings in you. And as I went through the scripture, things just started popping out. It's like, there's a piece of music, there's a piece of music, there's a piece of music. And a good example of that was the story of Joseph. I think it's the only time in the Bible you hear about the guy. You know, Joseph mm-hmm. shows up he's betrothed to Mary, and he's promised, but their marriage is not yet complete. And she shows up expecting a child, and he's thinking, you know, if this happens in society, in their society, it meant that if she was unmarried, it meant that she was an adulteress. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to expose her to that, so he had planned on divorcing her really quietly so that she would have a way out and she wouldn't be disgraced in society. And he had a dream. Of course, this is all in like one little spot in the Gospel of Matthew. And he has a dream, and the angel comes to him and says, you know, Joseph, don't worry about this, because what is conceived in Mary is from God. So he's convinced in that dream that he's doing the right thing by marrying her. So he not only is convinced of it, he supports it. And I said, okay, wow, you know, I think maybe that deserves a song. So it's a big part of the whole process, because if you don't have that, then none of the rest of it happens.
Right.
So yeah, legalistically or any other way, you know, then if Mary goes off and has the baby alone and is an outcast in society, then you don't get the whole story at all. So it all kind of comes down to that little linchpin. And then from then, the whole miracle of all of it starts happening over and over and over again.
Dan Knight is the composer of We Have Seen Him, a Christmas cantata. The world premiere of the work will be performed Saturday night, tomorrow night, at First United Methodist Church in Bella Vista. It will also be performed Sunday morning at 10:45 at the church. Dan Knight teaches and composes music at the University of Iowa. This is Ozarks at Large.
These arms are mine.
American singer-songwriter Otis Redding died on this date in 1967. Redding was born in 1941 in Madison, Wisconsin, and later became one of the great soul stylists of the 1960s. Redding joined Johnny Jenkins' Pine Toppers, a local Georgia band, and also served as the group's driver. When the group traveled to Memphis, Tennessee to record at the famed Stax Studios, Redding sang two songs of his own at the end of the session. One of the two, These Arms Are Mine, launched his career. As a composer, he introduced a new sort of rhythm and blues line, lean, clean, and steely strong. He arranged his songs as he wrote them, singing horn and rhythm parts to the musicians and, in general, sculpting his total sound. That sound, the Stax signature, would resonate for decades to come. Redding converted hippiedom to soul music at the 1967 Monterey Pop Festival and was just entering a new phase of popularity when tragedy struck. On December 10th, 1967, a chartered plane crashed into a Wisconsin lake. Ironically, the across-the-board success Redding had sought was realized only after his death. His most haunting composition, Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay, shot to the top of the charts and became his only number one hit. During 1968, three other songs, including Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, hit the charts. Redding was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1989. All I will be. On this date in 1957, the Daisy Manufacturing Company symbolically broke ground in Rogers for construction of a plant to produce Daisy BB guns and other models of air guns, after having operated in Plymouth, Michigan since 1895. Production of steel air guns evolved from a watchmaker's idea that windmills and air guns could be made of steel instead of wood. Originally, the air guns were used as premiums given to every farmer who bought a steel windmill, but the air guns soon took over the company's entire production, and the company name was changed from Plymouth Windmill Company to Daisy Manufacturing Company. Melville Dewey, the American librarian famous for creating the Dewey Decimal Classification System, was born on this date in 1851. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Friday Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Kyle, this is serious.
I can tell by the look on your face.
We've come together to talk about holiday depression.
Okay.
And how to cure it. Because if you need a good laugh right about now, boy, have I got some deals for you. If you see all four of these things, you won't stop grinning until spring break 2011.
Okay. All right.
The first one is Every Christmas Story Ever Told and Then Some.
Theater Squared's latest production.
And you hosted the talk before preview.
Right. At the Fayetteville Public Library last week.
Have you seen rehearsal?
I have not, but I'm going to opening night tonight.
Every Christmas Story Ever Told sounds all warm and cuddly. And it's got Rudolph, and it's got It's a Wonderful Life, and the Grinch, and the Snowman, and Charlie Brown. But what director Morgan Hicks calls a stew of amazing Christmasness has a little bite to it.
Mm-hmm.
There are things going on in Santa's workshop that good boys and girls shouldn't necessarily know about.
Okay.
And I expect that while you're laughing, you'll also be shaking your head a lot of the time. It opens tonight, as you said, and it sounds and looks and feels a lot like the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged that was such a hit. Here's the plot. Three actors are supposed to do a Christmas carol.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, Jim Gose's character, is very serious about it. The other two, Jordan Haynes and Sean Philip Mabry, hijack it out from under them. And before Marley's even cold, it's a totally different play. The Los Angeles Times called it a winking assault on virtually every secular seasonal classic since Charles Dickens and brashly enjoyable.
And it opens tonight and runs through the 26th.
It does. And tickets are $10 if you happen to be one of the first 30 under 30 who show up. Otherwise, they're $22 to $24, and you can call 571-2728. Now, while you're shaking your head and laughing, just go on over to the York Ballroom For Mark Landon Smith's I'm Dreaming of a DuPont Christmas.
Last time DuPont's going to be on stage here for a while.
Yeah. As Julie Gable said, Pearl is getting stretch marks.
Pearl being the matriarch of DuPont, Mississippi.
But before Pearl goes on a little hiatus, there are a lot of crises going on in DuPont. Cletus Locke, the pastor of the First United Congregational Shepherd of the Flock Baptistical Church, is getting a divorce.
Uh-oh.
Pearl's nephew, J.D., who's played by Jason Sewell, has come to visit for Christmas, but too bad he broke out of the state pen to do it. LaDonna, who thinks she's Hispanic, Patty Coolish, and her husband are trying to have a baby, but he's spending too much time at the Shake and Bacon Gentleman's Club. Joetta Ferguson, who is Jonelle Lipscomb, has decided to find a husband, and she's taken up with a man she met at imdesperateyouldo.com. He calls her his cougar, and she thinks it's cute. And Martricia, Jules Taylor, has finally found her true love beyond, of course, running the Curl Up and Dye Beauty Salon. You will laugh and shake your head. You will laugh a lot and shake your head. You only get four chances to do this.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Correct. 7:30, UART Ballroom on Dixon Street. Apparently, people are calling for reservations like hotcakes, so you should call 571-4879 and get your tickets. Don't just walk up. $12. We talked about A Tune of Christmas last week.
Right, in Rogers.
Ed McClure and Mike Maloney. 22 colorful characters from the fictional Tuna, Texas. I will tell you that the last 30 seconds of the show might just be the funniest. 7 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday. Tickets are $11 to $16.
Okay.
631-8988. And of course, there's also Second City's Dysfunctional Holiday Review.
A couple of chances to see that tomorrow.
6 and 9 on Saturday at the Walton Arts Center. Tickets start at $23. If that won't keep you happy through Christmas, I give up and I'm going to retire with Pearl. Now, if you're feeling more musical.
Plenty of opportunities this weekend.
The King's Singers.
Tomorrow night?
Tonight.
Tonight
at
Walton Arts Center.
At the Walton Arts Center. They are described as the suave, quintessentially English answer to the barbershop tradition.
A cappella.
Six of them.
Right.
Talk to a really funny bass named Christopher Gabitas, who talked about all the pranks they play backstage and things like being in this beautiful church. And part they're doing a call and answer, so part of them are off stage, except the answer doesn't happen because a giant cockroach has flown out of one of the cabinets and all of them have dropped their music. So when you're listening to this beautiful music, there's more to it than meets the eye. Tickets start at $25, 443-5600. The ACO Youth Choirs and Chorale are in concert at 7:30 Saturday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Beautiful voices, $10.
One night.
The Ozarks Chorale's annual Christmas concert is at the Auditorium in Eureka Springs at 7:30 Saturday. $10. A musical holiday concert with friends featuring the Arkansas Winds and the Ozark Mountains British Brass Band. 3 o'clock Sunday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Tickets are $12. And Ozark Bronze, which is a handbell choir, is playing free at 3 o'clock Sunday at the Fayetteville Public Library. And they will play with the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra and the Fayetteville Jazz Collective in a concert at 7:30 December 18th at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville.
Right.
If that's not enough to keep you busy, come by my house and wrap some presents.
Becca Bacon Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this week. We've got Minnie Riperton, Bill Sheffield, Charlie Musselwhite, Lee Jackson with Sunnyland Slim, Kid Ramos, Jeff Chaz, Mike Dollins, Devil's Promenade, and a few others. And again, that's every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Art in the Ozarks, an exhibit to benefit Clear Spring School in Eureka Springs, takes place today through the 17th at The Space in downtown Eureka. A collective of four Eureka Springs artists will be featured. A catered reception with live music is scheduled tonight from 5 until 9. Admission is free. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Art in the Ozarks is bringing together four Eureka Springs creatives, sculptor John Stalling, Robin Barner, and Patrick Smith, who operate Ozark Mountain Rustics, and organizer Adrian Frost.
John Stalling is an extraordinary artist. I had the fortune to meet him here in Eureka Springs. He's a metal worker. He has to make his living by making functional sculpture, but he also makes these absolutely splendid pieces. And he'll be showing them, and he's just a wild, brave spirit, and they're very, very sophisticated things about metal. And then Robin and Patrick, they're both young men compared with us. They're in their 20s, so they're just starting, but they're making beautiful stuff out of Ozark wood. We're all in the same big studio, which used to be Miracle Mansion, which is an extraordinary piece of architecture in itself. And they're making very dynamic and interesting furniture. So that's them.
Adrian Frost is a native of Cornwall, United Kingdom. He says he specifically relocated from upstate New York, where he mostly exhibits, to the Ozarks to enroll his son, Siddhartha, in Clear Springs School and to be closer to his son's mom.
So I drove down with my son into the amazingly beautiful Ozarks and this really great school. Here's the thing about coming to Eureka Springs and coming to this extraordinary part of America, the Ozarks. I paint outside, and my painting has changed, I swear, because I'm looking across from where I am, you know, in northwest Arkansas, this beautiful view across the valley, the whole landscape with the mountains at the edge there. And I'm not copying it, but it's getting into the work. It's like a light in the work. So I love that. And I've done all kinds of performance, music, dance, poetry, theater, and just straight painting and sculpture. So I kind of do it all, love it all. And, you know, taught in California, taught in New York, taught in various universities, and love being here and working in education with kids as well. That's it, really.
Open Adrian Frost's homepage, and you see his name in black enameled marks on a weathered oak plank. A couple of clicks into the older work reveal a white death mask and body cast limbs affixed to rusty sheet metal. Another composition mixes photo portraiture with chicken wire and hand-painted verse on paper. The newer work is Ozarkian, for example, an eroded ferrous iron pipe embedded in a bit of limestone karst. And Frost's paintings and sculpture involve lots of verbiage, nudging patrons toward his mindset. But out of the studio, he clearly enjoys staging events like Art in the Ozarks.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm really looking forward to the show. We're down... we're very lucky. John Rankin's given us a beautiful space opposite the post office there, above his building. And we've got the amazing Stevie Tombstone, who's a great rock and roller and a beautiful songwriter. And he lives in the area. His child is going to the school. And then we're going to have the lovely Karen Fitzpatrick and Pearl Brick, and they're both going to sing unaccompanied. So we're trying to make it a fierce and loving exploration.
The Friday evening reception from 5 to 9 is free, yet is a little mercenary.
A lot of the work is going to go for $100, and people will be able to pay $25 and take something with them. We're going to have a contract written up so that you can pay $25 and then you pay the next free $25 bi-monthly to the school. So we're trying to get it so that money comes in, people buy beautiful things, and they're not too expensive.
Art in the Ozarks to benefit Clear Springs School will also be catered by a Guatemalan restaurant based in Berryville, La Luna. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
A reception for Art in the Ozarks takes place tonight from 5 until 9 at The Space, across from the Eureka Springs Post Office on Spring Street. For more information, you can call 845-247-0026. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Walton Art Center, presenting the King Singers and Joy to the World tonight. This British a cappella ensemble will perform classical holiday readings and song selections, including 12 Days of Christmas, What Child Is This, and Joy to the World. WaltonArtCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets or more information. And Wellspring Healthcare Associates in Rogers. Wellspring offers mental health services for all ages, whether the challenges regard school, job, relationships, depression, and anxiety, or day-to-day life. Bilingual bicultural therapy is available. 986-0566 or wellspringhealthcare.com for more information. A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF Public Radio, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville.